It's Thursday, the day we read from your letters, and many of you wrote in response to our conversation with Tom Juneau. He wrote an article about a photograph of one of those who jumped from the World Trade Center on 9/11, and he talked about our cultural aversion to looking at those images.
From Monroe, Connecticut, Megan Gannon writes that she is a family member of a September 11th victim, and she says, "I cannot believe that your interviewee would describe the moment of that man's falling as perfection. Regardless of how it looks as a photograph, that was someone's life, and their family must live with the fact of his death every day. It was not perfection, it was unspeakable, and I turned you off and cried for the first time in my life."
Kua Patton of Moraga, California, writes that he was across New York Harbor from the Trade Center that day. He says he recoiled from disbelief as he realized that what he was seeing was someone falling from the towers. He writes, "As I listened to the description of the images, I was taken back to those terrible events and reminded of how I had never felt so helpless in all my life. Perhaps others don't look upon them for that reason. As much as I want to, I can't turn away from them, for they are indelibly etched in my mind."
We got a lot of mail about our conversation with evolutionary psychologist Satoshi Kanazawa. His hypothesis is that male scientists achieve real breakthroughs early in their careers, in part out of an unconscious desire to attract a mate.
Well, this theory triggered what Rachel Simon in Yonkers, New York, calls her first NPR driveway moment of rage. She writes, "First, his study seems to assume that all important scientific work was and continues to be done by men. I personally invite both Rosalind Franklin and Marie Curie's ghost to visit Dr. Kanazawa at their earliest convenience. Second, he assumes both heterosexuality and a desire to mate for all scientists. If there is one group that seems least interested in propagating the species, they are in the science departments of the three college campuses where I've spent the last 7 years."
And Effie Greathouse of Athens, Georgia asks, "Could there be a simpler, more sensible, and less mysterious explanation for the finding that younger male scientists are more productive than older male scientists? How about that once they get married and or have kids, their personal lives with their families no longer allow scientists to work the 60 to 80-hour work weeks that serious young scientists often put in order to establish themselves in their field?"
Our story about a young man struggling to recover from a serious brain injury drew this from Phil Simsich in Valparaiso, Indiana. "It never fails," he writes, "just when I think I've really got it bad, along comes a story like this brave fellow's. His determination, not just to live, but to live fully and well, reminds us all that things aren't so bad after all, and what's more, that the indomitable human spirit is equal to any challenge, no matter how daunting."
Finally, a suggestion from listener Brian Tillotson in Kent, Washington, after he heard our story about the close approach of Mars. He says, "Your listeners may get a rare treat if they look away from Mars this week. If they're in a very dark place with light-colored soil, and they wait for their eyes to get fully adapted to the dark, they may be able to see their shadow cast by the light of Mars. I saw mine while camping in the woods of northern Idaho last week."
You can send your comments to us at atc@npr.org. And please let us know where you're writing from and how you pronounce your name.